Fox News 97.1 FM.
This is Countdown 2024.
Here are Charles Feldman and Margaret Carrero.
In 62 days, on the 20th of January, it will be Penguin Awareness Day.
Penguin?
Penguin Awareness Day. That is absolutely true.
I'll be wearing black and white then.
It will also be the day that Donald Trump gets inaugurated again as President of the United States. Welcome to Countdown 2024. The incoming Republican-controlled Congress will face several early tests from the Trump administration, all centered around one core constitutional question. How much of their power are they willing to cede to President Trump, who seems eager to seize it? We'll put that question to the Republican congressman elected to take over Kevin McCarthy's old House seat in Bakersfield. And also, how will journalists navigate their second tour covering the Trump administration, especially after they've been labeled the enemy of the people? But first this.
An unknown and unauthorized third party has gained access to 24 depositions of witnesses tied to the various investigations into former Congressman and current U.S. Attorney General nominee Matt Gaetz. The hacked materials include the sworn deposition of a minor with whom Gaetz allegedly had sex. Meanwhile, some senators, including some Republicans, are stepping up their pressure on the House Ethics Committee to release its report on Gaetz before any nomination hearings.
President-elect Trump seemed to back up his promises to aggressively use tariffs against foreign imports by nominating Howard Lutnick as his pick for Secretary of Commerce. Lutnick, the billionaire CEO of Cantor Fitzgerald and leader of Trump's transition team, has repeatedly called for tariffs to protect U.S. industries from foreign competition. And Trump has once again turned to a TV personality for a cabinet position. He's nominated Dr. Oz, the longtime host of a daily talk show, a favorite of Oprah, by the way, and one-time losing Senate candidate, to head up the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid. Now, that makes four television personalities nominated to serve in the Trump administration. There will be nobody left on TV.
Stop watching then, huh? The Manhattan DA's office has agreed to postpone the sentencing of Donald Trump in the New York hush money case, in which he was convicted back in May. Lawyers for Trump have been arguing for the judge to dismiss the conviction outright. Meanwhile, a U.S. District Court judge in Washington, D.C., presiding over the cases of January 6th rioters, sent a clear message to the incoming president about blanket pardons for insurrectionists, saying, quote, "Blanket pardons for all January 6th defendants would be beyond frustrating and disappointing."
President-elect Trump and his fellow Republicans are now in complete control, or will be, of the federal government, occupying the White House, majorities in Congress, and a conservative majority in the Supreme Court. But already, Trump is leaning on his fellow Republicans in Congress to get out of the way of the implementation of his agenda at pretty much all costs. Vince Fong is the Republican congressman representing California's 20th congressional district. That was the longtime home turf of former Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy. Congressman, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So let me ask you something. I from time to time, when new presidents come into office, they will, for a couple of years usually, have their own party, whether it's Republican or Democratic, in complete control of government, both the House and the Senate. But is that ever really a good idea? Isn't it good to have a division and have at least one party in control of government?
Well, the voters were frustrated with the direction of our country, and I am one of them. And this is an opportunity for us to govern and to tackle these challenges head on. I've said before, our nation is in crisis. Our state is in crisis as a Californian. And so this is the time to act with a sense of urgency. We need to shake up the status quo. The fact that the House majority remained Republican, the Senate Senate Republicans have taken control of the Senate, and the Trump Vance administration won the popular vote and the electoral vote. There's a clear mandate, and I think the voters are demanding change and they're demanding solutions.
If there were something that were to come across to you as perhaps maybe something too extreme, would you be willing to stand up against it?
Well, I think we need to give the Trump-Vance administration a chance to govern. I think a lot of folks are trying to prejudge the outcome of a lot of things, especially those in the media. But, you know, we need reform-minded individuals who are going to shake up the way these agencies and departments operate, take power away from unelected bureaucrats. We need to reduce the tax burden, tackle inflation, reduce the regulatory burden, increase domestic energy production. You know, we're in a great powers competition with China and Russia. We have crises around the world. I mean, we have a lot of things that we need to tackle, and we need to act as quickly as possible. So I think that there's going to be a tremendous amount of partnership between the House and the Senate and the president. And I think that that's what our mandate is, to govern and to govern and to solve problems.
You replaced, as we said, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. You were close to him. You are close to him, right?
Yes, he's one of my closest friends.
Okay, so now let's talk about Matt Gaetz, who is being nominated, as you know, by President-elect Trump to head the Department of Justice. The guy who, as you also know, was largely responsible for orchestrating the removal of your friend and mentor, Kevin McCarthy. Do you think that Matt Gaetz is a good pick?
Well, I think senators will keep an open mind. I mean, there are a lot of questions about Matt Gaetz, but at the end of the day, there's a constitutional responsibility that the Senate has to provide advice and consent, and I look forward to seeing the outcome of that process.
Yeah, but not the question. The question was, what do you think? Do you think that he's a good pick?
I think that he'll do a good job if he's confirmed. I think, again, what the president is trying to do with all his picks is to put in people who will not kowtow to the bureaucracy, that will be reform-minded individuals, that will shake up the status quo. I mean, look, we've seen, you know, challenges in all of these departments, the red tape that's held up needed infrastructure projects. You look at the challenges with the politicization of the judicial system. I mean, there are serious concerns and problems within all these departments. And so the president is very serious about taking power away from these unelected bureaucrats and putting people in power and in charge to deliver real change. And so, you know, when you look at all these cabinet nominations, the Senate, I think, will keep an open mind. And I think the advice and consent responsibility is taken very seriously amongst the Senate. And I support the president in his ability to put a cabinet together that will govern and will deliver results.
We are speaking with Vince Fong, the Republican congressman representing California's 20th congressional district. You say that you believe that senators will keep an open mind with regard to Matt Gaetz and all of the other nominees that the president has put forth. Do you think that the Ethics Committee report on Gaetz should be released before any sort of nomination hearing?
Well, I think the Ethics Committee will work with the Senate in terms of providing them with the information that they need. Again, I mean, I'm all for transparency. But again, this is a responsibility that the Senate holds very, very dear. And I think that the information, if requested by the Senate, will be provided by the Ethics Committee. But I am not on the Ethics Committee. The Ethics Committee is a committee that is that's balanced. It's not one party controlled over the other. It is designed to be removed from the influence of other members of Congress. So, you know, it's designed for that reason. And so I think the Ethics Committee takes their responsibility very seriously, just as much as the Senate does.
Congressman, are you concerned at all about the proximity to power of Elon Musk?
I'm not. I think that we have a lot of good elected members of the Senate and the House and that who serve the president and who want to have, you know, good policy. And I think Elon Musk is one of those individuals that has a tremendous amount of expertise being in business and in commercial space. I mean, you look at the launch today. If you look at the news, SpaceX had another critical mission and was successful. And why not lean into his expertise, especially when we're, again, in a competition with China and Russia and the need for us to stay ahead of these countries that want to do us harm? Technologically, when you look at AI, when you look at space and quantum, you know, we need to make critical decisions and improvements in those policy arenas. And Elon Musk is one of those people that we need to get his guidance and input on.
Where do you stand with the idea of recess appointments?
Well, again, the Senate will make that determination. But I think right now that we need to, the House and the Senate and the president will work together to put together not only his cabinet, but to put together policy solutions that will address the key concerns and issues facing all Americans. But I think we'll have to figure that out as we go.
Yeah, I mean, right, because it takes both the House and the Senate to recess in order to do that, right?
Yes, it takes both the House and the Senate. And again, we have unified governance. And so I think a lot of people are trying to prejudge an outcome before it happens. I think we are working with the president and his administration to ensure that he has the individuals that he wants in positions of authority. And this is the partnership that we've built to try to tackle these problems that with in real time. I mean, we don't have a time to waste.
Let me ask you, talking about a time to waste, we're going to run out of it, but let me ask you one question about immigration and deportation. Both issues, of course, very important to this state, to California. The president-elect has verified that he does intend to declare a state of emergency on day one, that he does intend to use, and it's not quite clear how, the U.S. military in his deportation plans. Are you in favor of that, the use of the military on U.S. soil?
I think there are serious immigration problems, and we need to begin to remove individuals who've committed crimes against Americans if they've crossed, especially from illegal immigrants. I've been a critic of our sanctuary state policies in California. I think they've done California harm, not only in terms of our society, but in breaking down the rule of law. But I think it also has created a fiscal crisis in our state.
But using the military, yay or nay?
Oh, well, the governor has put the National Guard on the border. The president has used military assets before President Biden and President Obama, and President Trump is the commander in chief. So this is not a new idea. And you look at the border crisis that exists when it comes to fentanyl coming over and human trafficking and the cartels taking over areas of our border where, you know, the San Diego sector is the most active sector right now when it comes to illegal immigration. We have to secure a border, and we need to do it right away.
Vince Fong, Republican congressman from California's 20th congressional district. Thanks.
Are journalists investigating the Trump administration inviting investigations, incriminations, and even incarceration? We are looking at precarious position of the news media next.
It's Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM. This is Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM.
Welcome back. Along with Charles Feldman, I'm Margaret Carrero. The news media finds itself reeling on the eve of a second Trump administration. Layoffs across the industry have hit every facet of journalism. Reporters in TV, print, radio, and digital have been laid off in droves, and legacy newsrooms are facing deep budget cuts. And this election cycle found candidates increasingly turning to non-traditional media like influencers and podcasts instead of going on the usual news shows.
Yeah, and now journalists will have to navigate a president-elect who has repeatedly called for investigations and FCC license cancellations of news outlets that have been critical of him. Frank Sesno is an Emmy Award-winning journalist who served for over two decades at CNN as a White House correspondent, anchor, talk show host, and Washington bureau chief. He's now a professor at the School of Media and Public Affairs over at George Washington University. How you doing, Frank?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
So let me ask you something, and I'll start off with this. So all in just the past few days, as ratings have plunged, for example, at CNN, our old mutual employer, and MSNBC, you have the MSNBC Morning Joe couplet making a pilgrimage to Florida to talk to Donald Trump. You have the CEO of CNN telling the staff there that they shouldn't obsess over Trump. I'm not even sure what that means. What does that mean?
Well, I think it means don't do what you did last time, which was to hover and hang on every tweet and every comment and essentially ignore the rest of the world. I think CNN's coverage of Trump, you know, 1.0, if now we're heading into Trump 2.0, was over the top in terms of personal outrage and emotion and not enough focus on the facts and the issues and telling people what was actually happening. And this is a very different Trump administration that's coming in, and the coverage is going to have to be very different. The whole frame of this administration is different. The last time Trump came in, the big story was outsider. He's going to learn the ropes. He's a disruptor, but there are people around him. He's going to mature. There are guardrails. This time, the storyline is he knows the drill. He's had 4 years to get ready for the next appearance. He's angry and he's vowed retribution. And as we've seen with these cabinet nominations that he's announcing, they're not nominees until he's the actual president, but for now he's naming them, are not people who are going to put guardrails around the president. They're going to facilitate not just disruption, but maybe a revolution.
So what?
And I mean that in the sense of when the agency's not across the country.
So what is your advice to us fellow journalists, all of us, about covering a second Trump administration?
Cover what it means. Cover what's happening. Cover what these people have said they are going to do. And then the public is going to have to decide whether it likes it or not. The public is going to decide how they're going to, you know, talk to their other elected representatives. There is still a Congress, a Senate, and a House. They do still have to go along with many things. There will be many, many things that Trump wants where he's going to need 60 votes in the Senate. He's got a 53 vote lead. That gives him a simple majority, but it doesn't give him filibuster proof. So, you know, we've got to, journalists need to be journalists and report the story, not just report the outrage and the personality.
Granted, but I brought up the CNN and MSNBC issues for this particular reason, Frank, that with ratings going down for traditional media, with newspapers losing readership, is there the danger that some of this is being motivated by a fear that some of these organizations have of running afoul of Trump supporters and therefore losing revenue?
Yes. And you know that very well in Los Angeles, because Patrick Soon-Shiong, the owner of the LA Times, along with Jeff Bezos, owner of the Washington Post, said, oh, no endorsements this season. And they said it precariously close to the election itself, raising all kinds of legitimate questions. So there are a lot of things that are going on here. There is a legitimate threat from this incoming administration to the free press as we know it, because they have threatened, and the new FCC chair designate may you know, feel similarly, that there should be punishment for news organizations that are reporting things that those in power don't like. That's not the way it works in this country, and it's not the way it's going to work, although I suspect there are going to be real clashes over that. But, you know, we're heading into a very difficult time where this new administration is very much going to lean hard on any news organization that is doing things they don't like. We've seen that in the past. Those news organizations are going to have to push back, but again, I'm going to say that they need to do that in a way where there's not this sort of sense of personal outrage that there was last time, but a very businesslike approach to very serious issues.
All right, Frank, hold that thought. We'll be right back. How will Donald Trump deal with reporters who he's declared as the enemy of the people during his second White House tour? Finishing our conversation next.
This is Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM.
And welcome back to the Tuesday edition of Countdown 2024. Along with Margaret Carrero, I'm Charles Feldman.
Former veteran CNN journalist Frank Sesno remains with us to finish off our conversation on how the news media will navigate a second, more aggrieved Trump administration.
In this new era of Trump 2, Frank, what do you tell journalism students?
Fasten your seatbelt. Stay focused on what's actually happening. Hold people accountable for what they have said and done. And don't flinch. You know, journalism is not a popularity contest. This is the hardest thing about, I think, that we've been confronted with from the Trump administration and those who believe, as he does, that the media have been, you know, so egregiously horrible. The job is to hold anyone and everyone in power to account, and is to ask challenging and tough questions. That's much harder when you are threatened. And we've seen that in other countries, and I desperately hope that doesn't happen here, but I suspect it will. And so it's going to require courage and fortitude to do this job.
You know, Frank, I saw a piece today in the Columbia Journalism Review that suggested we should approach America with the humility of a good international reporter. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree with that. I think one of the Look, this is a very interesting thing to me because it lives on so many different levels. But there is legitimate criticism, very legitimate criticism of the media for much of the sort of what's called the mainstream media, for operating in bubbles, whether it's in Washington or New York or L.A., for that matter, and for not listening to the more than half of the country that just voted Donald Trump back into office. What is it that's going on in their lives, whether it's immigration or inflation or feeling that the culture war is out of control or whatever it is? And we may, you know, there needs to be more listening and more humility in saying, you know, we journalists don't have all the answers. Our job is to actually to ask the questions, not provide the answers. And so leave yourself open for discovery and get out there and do what you're supposed to do, which is report. And that includes reporting on people who don't typically have a voice or who may be saying things that some in the media don't like to hear.
Former veteran CNN journalist Frank Cessno, thank you so much.
It's my pleasure.
Thanks, Frank. Coming up on Wednesday's edition of Countdown 2024, Donald Trump's take on climate change is that it will create some new oceanfront real estate opportunities. So will the president-elect put any efforts into combating global warming? We'll preview environment and energy policies of the incoming Trump administration. That's tomorrow. If you missed today's show, catch up on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search Countdown 2024 and follow the show.